Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What imprint will your existence leave on the Earth? Is it even possible to live in the developed world without hurting the environment? Freely labeling himself a guilty liberal, New York writer Colin Bevin created a radical plan. For an entire year, he and his family would try to generate no trash, waste no resources, and buy absolutely nothing new except food, and even then, only local, organic, vegetarian, and unpackaged items. As the year went on, they also purged their home of possessions they didn't use, cut out almost all non-human-powered modes of transportation, and turned off the electricity in their apartment. So how did the family make do without modern conveniences, and what did they gain by doing without? Colin Bevin's new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. Colin, welcome to Think.
Hi.
This turned out to be almost a spiritual exercise for you by the time it was all said and done. Can you talk about that?
Oh, sure. I mean, a lot of what we're, our entire economy is predicated on this idea that humans have unlimited desire. So the economy is predicated on the idea that what we're supposed to do is make more and more stuff to fulfill all our desires. And in a lot of ways, our lives, the way we work is about that. We make money so we can buy more stuff. And that causes environmental impact. Well, what we kind of did was we kind of opted out of that system for a year. And in a lot of ways, what we discovered were much deeper and profound pleasures, like the pleasures of community and hanging out with our friends, the pleasures of hanging out together as a family. And so it turned out to be, you know, an exercise in asking ourselves in some ways, like, what are we really here for? What do we want to spend our lives in pursuit of?
Yeah, it's really interesting that one of the things that you discovered was that although we have all these conveniences for the purposes of giving us more leisure time, most often we use that extra time in pursuit of our paid jobs.
Right. So, I think about this a lot. Like, at a certain stage, when we turned I had to make my own bread because I couldn't find bread that was made from local flour. And, you know, local food was part of the thing. And then when it came time to turn the electricity off, I got a bunch of emails from our blog readers saying, how are you going to make your bread without your bread machine? Which is really funny to me. Like, so we have all these efficiencies in our life. Well, of course, I wasn't using a bread machine, but we have this idea that we need all these machines and contraptions to make our lives more efficient. But what we forget is that we spend so much time working to earn the money to pay for these efficiencies. That's one thing. And also, at the same time, the question becomes, when we have all these machines and gadgets and whatnot, that, at least in my life, that was making so-called making my life more efficient, I was making my life more efficient in terms of achieving results. But sometimes the truth of the matter is that the best therapy for my problems is to wash the dishes. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the best therapy is to knead the bread or to walk rather than to ride. You know, having these times where we're just doing things without machines, where we're doing things for ourselves, I found that getting back to that kind of stuff meant that my life was kind of more relaxed and more quiet in a good way.
What gave you the most anxiety before you actually began in terms of thinking, okay, this one's going to be hard for me personally to give up?
You know, when we started the project, I deliberately started. I didn't research it all and then start it. The idea was, you know, we went in, we said we're going to try and reduce our environmental impact as close as we can to zero. And you know, I didn't in the weeks or months ahead kind of research and figure it out ahead of time because I wanted to be like, you know, just a regular schlub like anybody else, just starting. So the first day of the project, I woke up and first thing I had to change my little girl's diaper. And of course that was a throwaway diaper. And next thing I had to get her some milk, and then I found myself emptying out a milk carton and throwing out the milk carton. So from the very beginning we were finding things that on that very first day I was like, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? Because I realized like there's so much going on in our lives that causes needless impact. And so, you know, in the beginning everything was hard. But it turns out that the hard part is actually habit change. It's not so much that the way of life that we eventually evolved was so much harder, but the transition from one place to another. And once we, That's why, for example, my book largely, you know, it turns out that many of the stories that I tell in the book come from the first 6 months of the project while we were learning to do it all, because in the second 6 months, it was just about doing what we'd learned to do, and it became much easier. It's the habit change itself that was hard.
It's worth pausing here to talk for a moment about your wife, because nobody would have confused her for a tree hugger before all this got underway. Will you tell us a little bit about high-impact Michelle before the no-impact year?
Yeah. Michelle and I often say we're very different on the outside, but very similar on the inside, and so... I kind of came from a family where I was that was not particularly materialistic, and Michelle came from a family where it was important to demonstrate the kind of success of the family, having come from homesteaders and had achieved a certain acumen in business, to demonstrate that success through, you know, showing what they had been able to accomplish through what they owned and stuff like that. So it was, you know, a kind of, in a good way, I'm saying, like showing a trophy for the hard work that they had done. And so Michelle was like a big buyer and a big retail therapy person. And then I came home and I said, you know, what about this idea? And of course she was really enthusiastic, but in the beginning, but really neither of us knew what we were getting ourselves into. And then as time went along, Michelle started to find that what we were doing was good for. She said, "We're doing this for our family, not for the planet." Because we started to, you know, for example, one of the big things we got away in the beginning was got rid of was the TV, and we just found that we spent more time with our little girl with no TV in the house, and so these things started to grow. And so Michelle kind of became a real convert to the cause.
There were some conflicts throughout the year, particularly involving her having to give up coffee. Did you feel bad asking her to be part of this and to get rid of something that she felt literally was a necessity to her life and her livelihood?
Yeah. There were lots of kind of things that we found we were really attached to. And, you know, all the time we were coming against little things like that, like the coffee thing. And we, you know, we had to figure out how to get through it together. So yeah, I mean, there were definite. One time, here's a story about when I really felt bad about the project, and it was Isabella and I were walking. My little girl, who's 4 and a half now, but was 2 then. We were walking down the street, and I was walking her home from her childminders, and it was pouring rain. And typical of the way the universe works. I couldn't get in a taxi, so there were lots of taxis driving by. You know, usually, if you can get in a taxi, there's no taxi, but I couldn't because of this project. And so we're walking along, and I have an umbrella, and I'm struggling to get this umbrella over Isabella's head. She was riding on my shoulders, and she kept crying. She would cry, and then she would stop crying. And I told her, "I'm trying, honey. I'm trying to keep you dry." And I was feeling so awful. I was like, my little girl is getting soaking wet because of this project. What kind of a dad am I? And then all of a sudden, I realized that she stopped crying, not when I had the umbrella over her and was keeping her dry, but she stopped crying when the umbrella was blown off her and she was feeling the rain. It was just like this incredible moment where I was like, oh, she's not crying because she's getting wet. She's crying because I'm not allowing her to feel the rain. So finally, I took the umbrella down. I put her down. We walked down the street. We got soaking wet. We jumped in every puddle, and it was really interesting because meanwhile, you know, everybody else was like running around trying to stay so dry. And it was this interesting moment that Isabella taught me where, you know, I thought it was so terrible to get wet, but she kind of taught me, wait a minute, it's really important for us to be connected to what's happening around us and in our environment, and we can enjoy it instead of working so hard to hide from it.
It was shocking to me how difficult it was for you to feed everybody, not simply because you were eating within 250 miles and not simply because you were going all organic, but because you cannot buy food without buying packaging at the same time.
Right. I mean, the first thing, the project worked in stages because it was too hard to bite off everything at the same time.
Sure.
So we did, the first stage was learn how to not make trash and then learn how to transport ourselves using our legs, basically, then eat local, et cetera, et cetera. So when I started with the don't make trash phase because I kind of thought it was the easiest because you know, we can see our trash as opposed to, say, not make carbon emissions, and you can't, which seems a little bit more ethereal because you can't see carbon emissions. But, of course, I was completely naive because so much of what we do, of our activities, are associated with packaging, you know, which is really funny because the use of packaging is the use of resources for stuff we don't even want anyway. Hmm. You know, all of us are just trying to get rid of the packaging. Anyway, so in, when it came to buying food, at first, you know, how do you buy your food? You know, these days, I've seen an individually wrapped apple, right? So how do you buy your food without packaging? So with slowly but surely, I kind of learned. I found places with bulk bins, and I got these muslin bags. But the other thing was, what I found out is, if you avoid packaging, it turns out you can't really buy food that is bad for you. Like, think about it. Like, candy bars come in packaging. You know, frozen food comes in packaging. Canned food is packaging. So what happened is, when we decided to stop eating food that came in packaging, we automatically ended up eating in ways that was way more healthy for us, because we were eating good produce, and we were eating, you know, good whole grains and all this kind of thing. So it was really interesting, because it turned out that this was a big learning of mine throughout the project and in the book, is in a lot of ways it turns out that when you try to live in a way that's good for the planet, you end up living in a way that's good for people too.
Colin Bevan is my guest. His new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. We'll be back to our discussion with Colin in just a moment. Right now, we would ask that you give us a call at 1-800-456-5372, because we are just beginning our fall 2009 membership campaign. And to that end, we have Jeff Whittington here. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And you know what? We have some great news, Chris. We are just beginning. Today's the first full day, but you, the listeners of KERA, have already contributed an astonishing $112,000 to the station.
Right.
Unbelievable. And I would like to challenge you, the Think listeners who are listening today on this beautiful Monday afternoon, to keep the drive ahead of schedule and push us past $120,000 raised by 2 p.m. We could wrap this drive up in record time with your contribution right now. We are ahead of schedule, Chris, and we want to hear from you at 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
You can receive a copy of Colin Bevan's book with our compliments when you join the station today at the $120 level or above. Of course, don't limit yourself if you want to give more, but it is available among our list of thank you gifts. You don't have to take a thank you gift. If, like Colin, you're trying to eliminate from your life additional items, that's fine too. We do have a green membership here at KERA where you will receive all your memberships via email and all the little documentation that you normally get in snail mail. We've been really excited to be able to provide that. Lots of you have asked for it. And so it's a great thing that we're able to do for you. Give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 right now, or you can, of course, go online to kera.org.
And, Chris, we're also we're giving away money today. You heard this? Have you heard that we're giving
away
money?
We're not supposed to be giving away money. We're supposed to be collecting money so that we can get on with this.
The really generous folks at Granite Foundation Repair, not only have they donated $1,500 to the success of the October Drive, but today, Granite Foundation Repair is offering a special incentive to everyone who makes a donation today, call or online, will be entered into a drawing to win a $500 money card that can be used anywhere, like a check or debit card. So you could win that if you call 800-456-5372 and make a donation, or if you go online to kera.org and make your donation. We're going to draw the winner during Marketplace today. So call or go online, make that contribution right now, and you might win a $500 money card.
No matter what, you will win another great year of radio on your public radio station here in North Texas. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. You can always make a contribution securely online at kera.org. We'll be back in a minute with more from Colin Bevan.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, who can help you get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin weekly this fall. Online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Colin Bevan. His new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. If you would like to receive a copy of Colin's book, you can call us and make a $120 contribution at 1-800-456-5372. To be part of this conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org. Colin, because you were blogging about this project as it was going on sort of in real time, and because you made some TV appearances about what you were doing, lots of people were aware. I was really surprised at how many people were just furious. The idea somehow offended their sensibilities. Did that also take you by surprise? Hi, Colin.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It turns out that the project was about my own life. I wasn't out there suggesting that anybody else do anything. It was deliberate in that regard, because the idea was, you know, let's see what happens if I try to keep my own side of the street clean, right? But people, the message in the end is that we may have to consume less. And it turns out to suggest that we consume less in these United States is quite the controversial message. And, you know, I didn't even think of it that way. So, yes, I was surprised. But the other thing, in addition to how some people kind of got really upset about what I was doing, is also literally thousands of people came to my blog, the blog that you mentioned, and they started talking amongst themselves. It turns out that I wasn't the only person that was doing this, trying to find a way of life that was both good for my family and good for the planet. It turns out that there are thousands of people in the United States that are kind of on this quest for themselves. And a lot of them started to come to the blog and started to have this conversation within the blogs and the comments on the blogs about what they were doing too. It was really, really amazing to find out that I was like part of something much bigger than myself. Hmm. And actually, because of that, and it helped in an attempt to help focus that kind of groundswell of people, we've started a little nonprofit at noimpactproject.org, the mission is basically to help people to find lifestyle adaptations that are both good for their lives and good for the planet too. And so people are taking part in trying to do this stuff for themselves.
Your sort of first edict when it comes to consuming anything is start with not wasting. And I wonder if you have gained any perspective on how we really lost touch with that ethos that was very common, I think, in our grandparents' day.
Yeah, sure. When I say waste, I mean, what is the real waste of resources is when we use resources that doesn't improve anybody's lives. So for example, when it comes to the water industry, I kind of think we made a wrong turn because there's a billion people that don't have access to drinking water. So we kind of made a wrong turn when we decided that what we would do is sell people who already have good drinking water, like Americans, the same water in plastic bottles. When instead we might have taken another turn, you could argue doesn't improve life. Instead, we could have taken another turn, and the water industry could have figured out how to get the drinking water to the billion people that don't have it, which would have increased quality of life. So the question becomes how the real waste to me is if it doesn't improve human life when we use resources. And it's really interesting because while it's controversial to suggest we consume less in the United States now, in, say, 1900, our culture to waste, to be unthrifty in our culture, was almost considered to be immoral. And in fact, through marketing and advertising, that kind of changed throughout the 20th century, so that now, you know, to be part of our culture means, you know, to use a lot of resources. But there's which begs another interesting point, because people sometimes say, well, we could never consume less because people are greedy and selfish. But actually, I don't believe that's true at all, because it was very much a part of our culture to be careful about our resources earlier in history.
Were there times when you were sort of making your way in the world, trying to live the way that you had decided to live for this year, and beyond in many ways, but when you wished that you didn't have to explain to one more person what was going on, or sort of look at one more set of raised eyebrows as you tried to say, I'm just going to drink water out of this ball jar that I brought from home?
Yeah, I mean, of course there are times when I personally get tired and drained, and I don't, you know, I just don't want to, I want to withdraw and I don't want to talk about it anymore. But on the other hand, I'm like in this sweet spot in my career where I get to use the skills that I, and the talents about myself that I care the most about, which are as a writer, as a communicator, a writer and a speaker. And I get to use them in service of what I care most about, which is basically asking this question or pointing up this question, like, how should we live? What's the best way? Can we find a way that's actually better for us as people and better for the habitat that we depend upon for our health and our happiness and security? So I you know, yes, of course I get tired sometimes, but at the same time, it's really wonderful to be part of this big, important and meaningful conversation.
One of the cool things that you did was make an effort to really connect yourself to the people who were producing the food that you were eating. And it's so interesting, I think, because we all know intellectually where our food comes from. And if people haven't been there, at least they've seen video of working farms and things like that. But what's different when you walk around on the field where the cows are that are producing the milk and the cheese that you're eating?
Well, you know, so a lot of times, many of us, or we did, you'd go to the grocery store, and you're kind of in the grocery store, and you're trying to figure out, well, which product can we buy where we're not getting ripped off and paying too much for it? Like, we're trying to find, you know, price comparison, and we look, and you're looking at the ingredients to see if there's any chemicals in it. And so it's like this whole process where you're almost like against the people who are providing you with the food. Like, are they trying to take too much of your money, and are they putting chemicals in your body that you don't want in there? And when we started to eat locally, originally we started to eat local food because local food has a lower carbon emissions associated with it because the food doesn't travel as far, right? But it turns out that there's all these other things. So as you said, we would go to our farmers market, and then slowly but surely we'd get to know our farmers. And the farmers themselves had values to do with how they grew their food. Like, these were farmers who owned their own land, who cared about it, who would take good care of the land, and who had values about, you know, like making sure that there were no chemicals in the feed for the cows that were producing the milk, or didn't want to put chemicals on the vegetables that were poison for the people or poison for the land. And then on top of that, they would be open. You know, we are now good friends with farmers at Hawthorne Valley Farm, one of our local farms, and we go and we stay there. And Isabella, my little girl, you know, she's always playing with the animals on the farm. And another interesting thing is that, you know, sometimes it's really hard to get children to eat their vegetables. But we've discovered that if Isabella plays a part in growing the vegetables and picking the vegetables, she eats them. So it's this amazing thing where you're not fighting against the producers. You don't feel like there's somebody trying to. You're actually, you know, you feel like when we pay for our food, we feel like we're supporting people who we care about, and it's kind of a bonus to getting the food. It's very interesting.
We have an email here from Billy in Denton who wants to know: was it rewarding to become fully self-reliant, and did it feel absurd in such a densely populated and heavily polluted urban environment?
Right. So that, I find that self-reliance, some of the questions are that have to do with how we lived and what we discovered are really subtle. And self-reliance was one of the things. I had this feeling, and I think a lot of people have this feeling too, that I was almost a node on the end of the matrix, like that I depended upon, you know, this gigantic system for food. And, you know, whatever happens, if, you know, if the system falls apart or doesn't work, then am I going to just starve to death? Like, what's, so actually, when we did the no impact thing, we had a little garden plot, so we, here in town, so we grew some of our own vegetables, I made our own bread, we walked places, so we just discovered that we were able to take care of ourselves. And that, in a way, was really, now I'm not talking about like isolate ourselves from a community, like hide in a cabin with a gun sort of thing, but just the idea that we have, you know, that we can develop the skills and we can do things for ourselves and participate in our communities at the same time was really gratifying. And then in terms of doing it in the middle of the city, the city is kind of, it's paradoxical, because we think of the city as like a really dirty place, but at the same time, here in New York, we per capita emit only a third of the carbon dioxide as the rest of the country, and that's because of the economies of scale. You know, we share our transportation, we heat our homes together in buildings, and things like that. And not only that, but it's important that those of us who do live in the city learn how to live sustainably, because more than half the world's population lives in cities now.
How hard was it to turn off the lights?
You know, for me, this was the thing that was really hard for me. Like, I was like, at that particular stage, I was like, why are we turning the lights off? The whole thing, you know, the project was intended to be extreme as an experiment, so that we could, you know, to gather as much information about what do we need and what don't we need. But when we turned the lights off, I was, you know, for my own part, I was like, oh, why are we doing this? This is just stupid. Michelle, on the other hand, strangely enough, because she like entered it as the more consumer type person, she really loved it when we turned the electricity off. She said that it had the sense of a vacation around the, you know, if you think about it, like, you know, the cabin by the lake oftentimes doesn't have any electricity. And she said that we would come home and all of a sudden it was really peaceful at home, that we would, just like you do in that cabin by the lake, we would start to go to bed earlier because, you know, there, if there was no sun, there was little light in our apartment. And so she kind of felt like the lack of electricity, well, for example, with no electricity in the house, we couldn't work at night.
So you're free.
In the United States, that turns to be really radical to leave your work in the workplace. And so that was really interesting.
Colin Bevan is with us. He's a writer whose new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. We'll talk more with Colin in just a few minutes. You can join that conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can join KERA and join your neighbors in making sure that public radio stays vibrant in your community by making a contribution right now. And you can do that by calling 1-800-456-5372 or going online to kera.org. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. He is senior producer of Think and also host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And we have made some progress, Chris. We've raised over now, thanks to you and your neighbors and your friends and everyone who supported the station, we've raised over $113,000 for the station. And we're just halfway through the first full official day of the drive. I know there was some stuff on Friday. There was some pledge drive going on Saturday. But here we are today on a Monday, a beautiful day. And, Chris, we've raised over $113,000. And I am challenging you, the Think listener, the Daily Think radio listener, to help us stay ahead of schedule. Help us get to that $120,000 mark by 2 p.m. Today. We've got about an hour and a half left to do it. And we can do it with your support at 800-456-5372.
I want to thank Nancy O'Shea in Fort Worth, Josh Martel in Dallas, Raquel Sarno in Dallas, and Yelena Gonopolsky.
Yep.
Sorry about that. In Plano, we had a finger on the letter for a moment there. We have a very low tech system of communication during the contribution drive, because we like to spend the money on programming and on radio equipment and not so much on this sort of thing. We are very careful with the money that you send us, and hope that you will choose to put some of your money to work here at KERA by calling 800-456-5372.
It all adds up, Chris. Every contribution at 800-456-KERA, every contribution online at KERA.org makes a difference. You know, Chris, the folks at Granite Foundation Repair have donated $1,500 to the success of the October Drive. Plus, they're offering a special incentive to you to call or join online today only. Everyone, who makes a donation via phone or online will be entered into a drawing to win a $500 money card that can be used anywhere, like a check or debit card. Our friends at Granite Foundation Repair have offered this money card to encourage you to support your public radio station today, and we're going to draw the winner during Marketplace. So call or go online right now, 800-456-5372. Join online at kera.org. It's very important that we hear from you right now.
If you are interested in getting a copy of Colin Bevin's new book, No Impact Man, and you would like to support KERA, we can take care of both at the same time with the same phone call to 800-456-5372. At the $120 contribution level, this is available as a thank you gift. We know you're not buying the book. I can't see the price on this, but I'm guessing it's about $25. It is $25. You could buy this at the store, and we hope you will if it's something you want to own. On the other hand, we love to be able to offer it to you if that will sort of put you over the edge and make you decide to make a $120 contribution to KERA or more if you're in a position to do that. It really is about deciding to support a service that you use that costs money. We can't exist without your generosity, and we thank all of you who have already called and made it possible.
You know, go get the book and call 800-456-5372 and contribute $95 to the station, because that way it's a wash for you.
Right.
Yeah, it's a wash for you, and you know, if you contribute the $120, we probably get the books a little cheaper than retail because we call the publisher and everything. But you know, it's fine. That's fine. The key thing is that you call 800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org and support the station right now. This is your opportunity to support the programming that you listen to every single day. You get entered in this drawing for the $500 money card. And you know what? It really does add up. The evidence is on the screen right in front of me. We've raised over $113,000 since Friday morning, thanks to you. Well, maybe not thanks to you, because we're still waiting to hear from you at 800-456-5372.
Figure out which you are here.
or online at kera.org.
You know, I mean, public radio, it's very simple. Sometimes you can listen to these membership drives for months and years and think, well, I'm glad all those other people are calling in right now. And somehow, I don't know what it takes to say, we really aren't talking to you. And at some point, everybody else that you're currently counting on to support your radio station and make sure you have this content made that switch that we're hoping that you will make today. Took responsibility for programming that matters for the kind of radio that you believe ought to exist in our community. We are a locally owned, locally programmed station. We do our best to bring you the best quality guests in the world. Colin Bevin's a great example. We would love to hear from you now in support of that at 1-800-456-5372. You can also go to kera.org.
Yeah, I want to thank Catherine Cuttis and Alan for renewing her membership, Larry and Irene Lambert in Wichita Falls. And we also heard from Davis and Janice Tubra in Irving. I hope I'm saying your last name right, Davis. 800-456-5372. Please follow their lead. Please go online to kera.org and make your contribution right now. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, who can help you get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin weekly this fall. Online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Our guest this hour is Colin Bevin. He is a writer whose new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. You can receive a copy of this book with a $120 contribution to KERA at 1-800-456-5372. To join the conversation, you can send email to think@kera.org or call us at 1-800-933-5372. We have an email here from Paul in Farmers Branch, who says, meat has an enormous impact on the environment. Were you a meat eater at first, and did you reduce or eliminate meat in your diet?
I was kind of on again, off again meat eater. I had a particular weakness for pepperoni. but Michelle and my wife and Isabella, my little girl, ate meat. And then we kind of moved into the food stage, trying to eat sustainably. Not only, you know, Michelle kind of agreed that, well, as Michelle put it, we should eat nothing that wiggles or has a face. And part of that was because of beef production, as the emailer suggests. Yeah, beef production actually causes more carbon emissions than our entire transportation sector worldwide, and that has to do with all sorts of things, including how cows' digestive systems work and the deforestation associated with beef production. But we also thought the reason why we did is nothing that wiggles or have a face thing, because it also suggested, because you could just eat fish, but we also have this big problem with the fisheries collapsing in our oceans. So, you know, in line with the philosophy, which was like no impact as opposed to just reduced impact, we kind of went that the whole hog in that area.
What did it feel like when the year was over and you, at least in your mind, had the freedom to do what you wanted to do, either resume the way you were living before or keep certain changes? What was that moment like?
Well, for me, it was actually really confusing. There's a lot of people, as that moment when the year was over came up, a lot of people said, "I bet you can't wait till it's over. What's the first thing you're going to do? Are you going to ride up and down in an elevator just for fun?" You know? And actually, it was so confusing because I had been spending the whole year researching and learning about the various environmental impacts of our activities, and of the power generation, so of the lights being back on, and also at that time there had been this huge amount of press coverage, so I felt that eyes were on me, and so that people were paying attention to the choices that I made. So I found it very confusing, and it took me a while, but I developed this understanding that in some ways, it's not that we use resources, it's what we use our resources for. So if I'm using resources in ways that are truly good for me and my family and my community, then that's a good use of resources. If resources are being used in such a way that aren't good for anybody, one of the things I think a lot about is packaging. And the reason why I think about that is because, 40% of our trash is packaging, right? And here in New York City, many of our garbage trucks pass through a particular neighborhood called the South Bronx. And the result is that we have, because of the diesel particulates coming out of the garbage trucks, there's 5,000 trucks a day pass through this neighborhood. The kids actually have amongst the highest asthma rates in the whole country. So to me, that's a very poor use of resources, because 40% of the trash that's being trucked through there is packaging that nobody even wants, and it's making kids sick. So that's not the use of resources to improve people's lives. Anyway, once I came up with that understanding, like when I use resources to improve my life or the lives of those around me, that's a good use of resources. When I use resources that doesn't make an improvement for anybody's life, then that's not such a good use. Then that's when my confusion started to clear up.
Where do you stand now with regard to the impact of personal choices as opposed to the changes that we might make based on governmental regulations or sort of corporate policies?
I mean, here's the science tells us that we have to reduce the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to what's called 350 parts per million. We're already at 390 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So that means that we actually, as a culture, as a planet, we have to make a lot of changes. And that includes how we generate our electricity, but it also includes what we prioritize in our economy. Like, what really makes people happy? Is it getting more and more and more stuff? Or might it be building a more robust community where we can rely on each other and enjoy each other and socialize, which actually doesn't take resources? So because it requires so much change, I believe that we require change at the level of government, but we also require change at the level of culture and society, how we live as a people, which isn't to say we should deprive ourselves. It is to say that we should ask ourselves the real questions about what makes people happy, and how can we live to make the most people happy. So if we are going to get this level of change happening, it means that, yes, our government is responsible, but also I believe that I am responsible too as an individual, that my own personal changes affect the people around me and my wider community, and that when many of us choose to make personal changes or individual changes, then that actually begins to represent the beginning of cultural change, which politicians take into account when they're making their policies. So that's a long way of saying that our change needs to be both top-down and bottom-up, both individual-level change and governmental and corporate change, too.
Could you have done this, Colin, if you lived in the suburbs?
I could have done it, but I would have had to do it differently.
Yeah.
And so this is what's so interesting, I think, about this environmental problem that we face, is that the solutions to the problem vary from place to place to place, right? So in the city, it's very easy to get where you need to go by bicycle, for example. In the suburbs, it's, you know, oftentimes it's not so easy. Although many of our trips are short, just a couple or 3 miles, you know, the trip to the video store and stuff like that, where we could actually leave our cars in the driveway, walk and bike and get exercise at the same time. But, you know, a lot of people have to go 50 or 75 miles to work, and, you know, that's too much to ask for biking. On the other hand, because I live in an apartment building, I cannot put solar panels on my roof. But people who live on suburbs and in single-family homes, they can. So there's different things that each of us can do depending on our circumstances.
Were there any little luxuries that you initially returned to indulging in that you found that you couldn't enjoy anymore?
Oh, you know, the one thing that we have not taken back is the air conditioners. We've given our air conditioners away. And here in New York, of course, it's not like it is in Texas. But we do have a week or 2 weeks every year where the nights are very hot and quite muggy. So on those nights, we'll kind of pack up as a family and go down to our local park, and Isabella will play with a fountain. Like you know, used to happen in the old days. That's what fountains were for. It was a place for people to gather because it cools the air. The air conditioners was just for us something that it just seemed a little bit indulgent. We didn't feel we really needed it. We did feel like we wanted to make some sort of draw a line in the sand where we were making some sort of a sacrifice. So air conditioned in our apartment, air conditioners are something that we couldn't return to.
Does Isabella have any idea that her lifestyle is different than many of her friends?
That's the whole thing. I mean, in many ways, our lifestyle is not different, because mm-hmm. the big thing that Isabella has that her friends don't have is we have these Michelle and my wife and I each have a rickshaw bicycle, like a tricycle with like this kind of bench in the back. It looks a little bit like Santa Claus's sleigh with a bicycle in the front, and Isabella rides in the back and she loves it. And we do this thing. We call it some days. I'll say to Isabella, "What do you want to do today, honey?" And she says, "Let's go see what happens." And what that means, that's parlance in our family for get on the rickshaw and just ride around and see what, you know, see what we see and see where we stop and see who we bump into. That's how we get Isabella to and from school. It's how we do our grocery shopping. It's how, you know, what we do. So there are little kind of things like that we have that are unique to our family that are kind of fun. And Isabella certainly gets that.
Colin Bevan's new book is called No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. There is also a documentary out that will be in the Dallas area sometime very soon. Colin, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me.
My name is Chris Boyd. We want to thank all of you who have been listening this hour, and also thank all of you who are calling right now. The cool part of the conversation is over. You are safe to pick up the telephone and call 1-800-456-5372. Make your contribution. We are in our fall membership campaign. We haven't had one since, the hot, hot days of summer. And now everybody's back and people are back in school and we're sort of back to business. We are in the business of raising just enough money to keep us going until the next drive. That's how it works around here. When we get to our goal in this drive of $600,000, we're done, Jeff Whittington.
Hey, Chris. Yeah, actually, you know, it's been 6 months since we did a membership campaign.
That long?
Yeah, we didn't do one in
the
summer.
They always seem to come up more.
Yeah, we didn't do it, and we haven't done it since April. And, you know, we promised you in April that we would not fundraise live on the air like this until October. So here we are, as promised, as scheduled. And you know what? We are ahead of schedule right now in this membership campaign, Chris. In our last break, we'd raised, just thanks to you and your generosity, over, not you, Chris, but you out there, over $113,000. And we're trying to hit $120,000 today by 2 o'clock to stay ahead of schedule, and it's going really well. The number to call is 800-456-5372. The online place is kera.org.
We know that the average gift is somewhere a little over $120. So if that's in your ballpark, you might want to decide that you want to receive Colin Bevan's book, No Impact Man, as your thank you. Happy to send that to you with a contribution of $120 or more. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. You can also do all this online at kera.org. If the concepts in No Impact Man are of interest to you, you may also be interested in our Green membership. You can ask the volunteer on the phone about that, or you can set this up online. Essentially, what it does is replace all of the snail mail items that you used to receive with email communication. It's great for us because we save money and we save resources, and it's just that much less junk mail coming into your house. Not that KERA communications are junk exactly, but you don't have to find anything to do with those papers when they come.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book, and just turning randomly. Turning randomly to page 217 here, it is the epilogue, Life After the Year Without Toilet Paper is what it's called. So you know, it's fascinating. It's really entertaining. And the documentary is also really interesting, which will be out soon. You can get a copy of this book, as Chris said, when you join the station at the $120 membership level. That's just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member of KERA. The sustaining membership is really easy. You set it up. It's an automatic, monthly, worry-free transfer from your bank account to KERA. And in this case, it would be $10 a month. You probably have more ATM fees than that. So it's really affordable. And not only is it affordable for you, but it helps the station because the station counts on those transfers every month as sort of a stable foundation of support. So you kind of get more bang for your buck when you join as a sustaining member, and you can keep it going for as long as you want to. Call us, 800-456-5372, or join online at kera.org.
Big thanks to all of you calling, including Cornelia Lind in Keller, Judy Hayes in Tyler, Jeff Raymer in Grapevine, and Andrea Calloway in Dallas. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. You can join online at kera.org. I think all of this, the contributions that you make really reflect your values. You may not agree with everything discussed on public radio, but it is a value to make sure that in your community there is a place where serious ideas can be discussed, where art and culture and politics are really explored in depth. This is only possible because of listener support. Your support allows us to remain on the air here in North Texas.
And you can do that by calling 800-456-5372 or pledging online at kera.org. $100, $365, $500. Every donation helps KERA. If you can donate $1,000 to the station right now at 800-456-5372, that would be fantastic. We would love to hear from you with a $1,000 contribution today, the first day that Think is on the air during the membership campaign. It goes a long way. It goes a long way to provide KERA 90.1 Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, also K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman. No matter where you get KERA, you're listening to KERA, you're using the service, you're enjoying it. So why not support it?
That also includes those of you who might listen online or listen to the podcast. You are definitely part of our audience. We consider you and your needs very important. We hope that you also, even if you are far away, might consider making a contribution specific to this program, perhaps, or to anything you ever wanted to know on Fridays. Your contributions help to make it all possible. It's very easy and quick to call and join at 1-800-456-5372. Today only, we are able to offer you, with a $300 contribution, floor seats, a pair of floor seats to the Star Wars in Concert event that's taking place Friday. This is Friday, October 23rd, this Friday at Cowboys Stadium. There will be a 120-piece orchestra, full choir, and scenes from the movie. I have to tell you, floor seats are sold out. If you went to Ticketmaster or wherever you buy tickets and tried to purchase them, you couldn't get a pair. Maybe on Craigslist they're running much higher than this. I don't know. But when you make a contribution today only with a credit or debit card of $300 or more to KERA, you can get a pair of those tickets and attend the show.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. The web address, kera.org. Want to say thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Paul Dubay in Garland, also Rama Vanjipuram in Plano, and Luis Emilio Fernandez de Wareki in Murphy. Yeah, thanks so much for making your contribution. Thank you so much for your support of KERA, especially during the Think Show today. You know, we come in, so Chris and I come into work every day, and we're so excited to be able to bring you interesting conversations. You know, Colin Bevan in this hour. Next hour, award-winning, world-famous writer Barbara Ehrenreich is going to be here on the phone with us. So it's just a thrill to be able to bring you this kind of programming day after day. And you make it possible when you call 800-456-5372, when you contribute $200, $300, or $400 to the station.
Your call at 1-800-456-5372 is the first step toward becoming a member of KERA. Support it at any level that makes sense to you. You can also make this contribution online at kera.org. We'll be back next hour with Barbara Ehrenreich. Thank you so much for your support.
The Think team includes assistant producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.